So this is Roger Molina on Creative Disturbance. I'm delighted today to be talking to Jim Hurt from Southern Methodist University, SMU. Jim, maybe you could present yourself and tell us what you do.
Sure. As mentioned, my name is Jim Hurt, and I'm the Director of Arts Entrepreneurship at Meadows School of the Arts at SMU.
And tell us a little bit about the program. As I understand it, the program you're running is a fairly recent one, and it's a kind of program that's only emerged in the last 10 years.
Our program is 5 years old. It was begun by our then Dean, Jose Bowen, who's now president of Goucher College, and it's been continued by our current Dean, Sam Holland, has tremendous amount of support from Dean Holland, and as well as the board of directors of Meadows School of the Arts. And you know, SMU is in a period right now where it's really emphasizing and supporting entrepreneurship. So having entrepreneurship within the arts, it's a good time to be doing what we're doing and where we're doing it. I feel very supported.
And I think one of the things that you've explained is that it's not a major, but it's something that all the art students should be able to take as a minor.
Right. We're offering a minor. I think that's a really important way to offer arts entrepreneurship, because it never removes the artists from their artistic training. And art skills are very much like farm tools left out in the rain. If you don't use them, they'll rust. And you have to always be working to keep your skills as sharp as possible, so that you can deliver excellence, artistically speaking. So by never removing the artist from their artistry, but supplementing their education with this entrepreneurial component, you increase the likelihood of their making a living while simultaneously they're improving their artistic skill.
And at the same time, the range of creative artists and their activities is very large, right?
Yes, we have a wide range of disciplines that one can study at Meadows School of the Arts. But our classes are also cross-disciplinary, so we get students from all over campus.
From theater, visual arts,
not only that,
some business students.
Science and business and engineering, and really all over the campus, from all of the colleges. And I think that's really wonderful. When I first arrived, I wondered, you know, how's this going to play out? You know, I was very interested in specifically focusing on artists and their process, but you know, having engineers in the classroom, very often they know how to code, they know how to build prototypes. Our students they live in the creative realm. They're utilizing their imaginations very often, daily, and that's one of their great strengths. So, to combine the engineer and to combine the business student who has an understanding in finance, and to combine the artistic individual who may be an evangelist by nature and, you know, can really sell anything to anyone and lives in the creative realm, to combine all of those varied interests and to put them into a team together where they self-organize, they're able to bring the necessary skill sets very often to accomplish goals that they would not be able to accomplish individually.
And at the same time, not only is it cross-disciplinary in that sense, but you're also working with people whose creative work is an individual practice, and others whether it's a collective practice. And so you also have that range of the way that they implement their creative visions.
Yes, some will create nonprofits, some have. Some will go on to create for-profits. They may be sole proprietors, they may create LLCs, corporations, whatever. But there are also students who are music students who say, you know, I want to be a performer, I want to be a singer-songwriter, or a theater artist who says, you know, I really just want to act. And I'm always excited by those students when they take classes like developing an arts venture plan, which is essentially business planning, but for artists. And because we can say, you know, let's explore your career with you as your business. You are your business. You are your product as an actor. And if you develop a strategy as you would a business plan for an LLC, a traditional organization, you know, developing products or services, you will increase the likelihood of working and sustainability, because you're able to understand what your business model is, what your value is, how to differentiate yourself in the market, how to market yourself, who your customer is, how to provide your value or deliver your value to your customer. You strategize. And so you're able to think of your career as an actor, let's say, I like to say as a three-dimensional object. You know, if you hold a three-dimensional object in your hand, you can look at it from every single angle. And as a result of looking at it from every angle, you come to understand it from many different angles. And you can do this with an artistic career. Business plans are antiquated documents the moment they're created. You know, you may strategize and think your customer is going to zig when instead they zag. And if they change, you know, in such a way that your plan suddenly becomes irrelevant, if you've strategized so completely and so fully by thinking about your business from all of the different angles, you're able to adapt, you're able to pivot within the moment and maintain.
Well, one of the things that interested me as we were chatting before was the kind of mental model that you're sort of propagating, the kind of metaphors you're using about what the activity is. Maybe you can unpack that a little bit, because you talked a little bit about the hero model and other ones. So, you know, what is the sort of metaphorical world that you carry or that you're trying to convey?
I think that artists and entrepreneurs are very similar in a lot of different ways. One has customers, the other one has an audience. An audience, of course, is a customer, you could say that. Both are pursuits of risk. Both are going on adventures. One creates ventures, another one goes on adventure. Both are service acts. You're either serving your customer or your audience. And so I find a lot of parallels. For a number of years, I've been very much into the work of Joseph Campbell and his thinking around the mythic structure of the journey of the hero, this heroic adventure structure that's present in so many world mythologies and stories. It's very common in movies that we watch and novels we read. And I've found a parallel. I'm not the only one who's found such a parallel, but find a parallel between the heroic journey structure that Campbell articulated, and later a gentleman by the name of Christopher Vogler wrote The Writer's Journey. He's articulated a much simpler structure, I believe, that I really like, and that of the entrepreneur. In Vogler's structure that stems from Campbell's, the hero begins in their ordinary world. It's the world they know. It's their everyday world. And then there comes a call to adventure, and the hero typically says no to the call to adventure, but then accepts the adventure, and they commit to the adventure. And when they do, the entire world seems to change. Mentor figures might appear. They experience tests, trials, and tribulations. They meet collaborators and allies. Well, the same is true for the entrepreneur. The call to adventure could be a vision they have, a spark of insight that leads to an idea. Very often people will say, well, I can't do that, it's too risky, or, you know, I don't have the money to do it, or I don't want to do it. And they come up for all kinds of reasons to not do it. But very often, individuals will say, you know what, I will do it. I'll commit to my vision. And when they do, very often they need mentors just as heroes do. You know, classic mentors, Obi-Wan Kenobi in Star Wars, and Gandalf in Lord of the Rings. Very often they're depicted as, you know, wise old figures with beards. But they can be, you know, any sex, any age. The college students who are studying entrepreneurship may find mentorship in their professors or people who have been out there in the field, who have been entrepreneurs themselves. It can help them navigate the landscape, who can give them tools to help them persevere in the market, whether that's philosophy or techniques.
So one of the questions that came up earlier was then, so there was sort of in the mythology of the individual hero, where in fact some of these projects are collective heroes. And so how do you see collectives developing this kind of way of thinking about what they're doing?
Well, I think that it's important to always know your customer, to know your audience. They are the final collaborator in your process. Without a paying customer, there is no business. Without an audience member, there is no active theater. You know, they are the necessary final contributor to that creative act. And so in that respect, it's really important to keep them in mind in the creative process. If you create for yourself and yourself alone, you may exclude the interest of the customer or the audience member. But if you create for them, with them in mind, you could interpret this as a service act. And that's what the hero does. They serve something that is larger than just themselves. You know, whether that's an ideal or you know, whether that's a community or whether that's an individual customer or a patron, the entrepreneur and the artist alike are both serving something that is ideally larger than themselves. It could be a community.
One of the things you mentioned also is the idea that actually the artist can begin by working with a customer of one mm-hmm. and really understanding that other person and their interests.
Mm-hmm.
And that indeed in today's online world, if you've done that, there's probably many other people like that one person.
Agreed, yeah. I definitely want to speak to that. I want to come just back to the previous thought.
Yeah.
About building a team and
yeah.
and this idea of each person serving in a heroic context. So you can have a team. More ventures succeed when they are creating as a team, as opposed to the Lone Ranger going out there and creating alone and being all things to all people. When you work as a team, you can support one another's weaknesses with the other's strengths. And if we have a common purpose and a common mission and we're serving a common goal, then we really can act as a collective and as a unit. And consequently, we each together act heroically in the service of our community and our audience. But back to your second question about the audience, if we understand who we are serving, there's a higher likelihood of them, the customer, the audience, liking what it is we're creating if we create with them in mind. So in Bill Ouellette's book, he's the head of MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, their entrepreneurship program. And Ouellette wrote a book called Disciplined Entrepreneurship. And in that book, he says you should really always create with the customer in mind. And what he means by that is not a demographic, but a living, breathing person with a pulse and a name. And the idea is if you create with that person in mind, you come to know them, you interview them, you really understand them. And ideally, that person is you. You are your own customer. And if that person is you, you know what you like, and you know what you don't like, and you know what blogs you're reading, and you know what you need, and you know what your pain points are, right? And if not you, maybe it's someone on your team. And you can constantly reflect back and forth so that you know what that person likes. Well, the idea is if you create with that individual in mind, even though that person is a unique individual, you know, and we all are, on a planet with nearly 7 billion people, patterns emerge. So even though that person is a unique individual, in all likelihood, there are a lot of other people in this world that are like that individual. So if you create with, let's say, you know, Mary or Sam in mind, there are a lot of Marys and Sams out there. And if you market to specifically the Marys and Sams, or specifically the one individual, the Sams that are out there, let's say, there's a higher likelihood that you'll find success because you've created specifically for the Sams of the world.
Great. So we have time for maybe one last thought. One of the things that you also talked about is using gameplay as a teaching methodology. So maybe you could just tell us about that a little bit, and then we'll unfortunately have to close the podcast.
Sure. I like to teach through games and instill a notion of play in what we do in the classroom. I find that artists very often, they love to play. Musicians play instruments, theater artists perform plays. It's in the vernacular of what we do. And I find that artists traditionally historically have strayed away from business classes. They run from it, in fact, with some exception. I'm generalizing. But if you appeal to artists' sensibilities, instead of giving them the good medicine, which would be a traditional business class or structure, instead appeal to their sensibilities, which, you know, what are they? They love to play. So if you play games and teach truly hard skills and soft skills both, within a play context, you can attract the artists because that's the world in which they live. They love to play. They love to play within their imaginations. They love to play with each other. It's fun. I mean, artists create very often because they're compelled, but also because they enjoy it. So if you foster this environment of joy, more often than not, you're going to attract those artists, and consequently, they're going to learn these entrepreneurial skills. A program can grow out of that. It can grow larger and more robust. And, you know, we as artistic institutions, we need to demonstrate the efficacy of the training. We need to demonstrate that our artists can work. Entrepreneurial skills will increase the chances of our artists working, but first we need to get those artists in the classroom. So teaching through games is a great way to do that.
Very good. Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to end the discussion here. It's been a pleasure meeting you and then discussing your ideas. So hopefully we can continue the dialogue later.
I feel the same. It's been a great joy. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.